Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Lori Fatchett McGee, and it is my privilege to serve as worship leader for today's service. I am joined today by Worship Associate Jeff Marsh, Director of Religious Education Lily Rappaport, Music Director Hal Walker, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Peace Choir.
I'm loud enough without this.
Is there anybody else from the committee, Service Auction Committee, who's here? We had a lot of people for service. We wanted to thank so much all of you who donated time and talent and treasure. We had so many wonderful volunteers this year assisting, and a lot of hard-working people that came together to make this a huge success. And as treasurer, this makes me very happy. We made $29,000. Yay! And that's last year was 25,000. So we had a nice increase, and that's wonderful for all of us to reach the goals that we've set for ourselves in the church. I wanted to thank the committee. I'll read the names. Cheryl Casper, Elaine Bowen, and Bill Bowen, who was a master in the kitchen with us. Jen Gregg, Lois Weir, Michelle Sinecki, Sarah Fear. Oh, I thought Sarah was here. I thought, come up. Come on. I thought you were here. Sarah is honest to gosh. After all my years of being in a professional teaching and being on committee, she's the best note taker I have ever met. I'm not kidding you. I told her that. I am not kidding you. She's taken minutes for our meeting. If you need any minutes taken for anything, trust me, she's the best note taker I have ever seen. Andrew Wiebe, Deb Biggins, Jan Noden, Jen May, Meg Milko, Sandy Bowers, Trish McLaughlin, and I'm happy to say that next year's Service Auction Committee chair will be Jen May. We look forward to that. Yay!
We light our chalice this morning with the words, "For chalice lighting of Advent. In this holiday season, may we find the patience to forgive ourselves, to forgive those who do not do as we wish. May we find patience. May we find the wisdom to let be. Come.
To tell you my own Christmas story about presents. When I was seven, Christmas was a very busy day. I always woke up first and dragged my sister and my parents out of bed. We found a bunch of gifts under the tree and quickly opened them. We played for a while and then packed up to go to my dad's parents. They lived in a small house in Barberton. There were always a big bowl of M&Ms, Hershey's Kisses, nuts, and cutout cookies. There were always lots of boxes under the tree. My sister and I, being the only grandchildren, sorted the gifts out and then dove in. I remember getting lots of G.I. Joe paraphernalia, Hot Wheels, the latest Milton Bradley game, and other trinkets. Santa was very generous. By the end of the morning, I was exhausted from playing with my new toys, and my stomach was bloated with candy. We then traveled to my mom's parents in Norton. There we were joined by a large group of aunts, uncles, and cousins. A big meal was planned, and we waited for gifts until we had eaten. I managed to eat a little sandwich and some scalloped potatoes. We all sat in a circle, and the grandchildren passed out the gifts. We all took turns, but my grandfather, who sat in the corner, never seemed to open any of his. He just sat back watching and smiling. Christmas giving here was much more practical. I received a pair of pants and a sweater for school, along with a popcorn ball my grandmother always made. No toys. This did not sit well with a 7-year-old, who had spent the morning gorging on chocolate and tearing through rolls of wrapping paper. Later, I was found by my cousins and my uncle sitting on the basement steps, quietly sulking. At that point, I said the words that still haunt me today, that I am reminded about each Christmas. I didn't get enough. Of course, I got over it eventually. And gradually, over the years, the thrill of toys has faded. We still get together with this side of the family every year, as my father and his parents have passed on. But now I find myself sitting off to the side with a small number of boxes waiting for me to open while I sit back, smile, and watch the joy in the eyes of everyone else. I have learned that my grandpa had it right and that being present was the greatest gift of all.
Well, today's story is going to be about presents. How many of you enjoy receiving gifts? Okay. And how many of you enjoy giving gifts? Oh, okay. So you'll have an opportunity. We're still collecting gifts for this Kent Social Service and for Freedom House. You'll notice a big box downstairs in Fellowship Hall, Fessenden Hall. So today's gift is called, the story is called The Gift of Nothing. It's about two of my favorite characters, Earl the dog and Mooch the cat and their family that they live with. So this special day was coming, and Mooch wanted to give his best friend Earl a special gift. But what would he get? What could he get him? Earl already had a bowl, and he already had a soft pillow that he slept on, and he had his dog toy. So what do you get somebody who has everything? And Mooch thought and thought about it, and then he suddenly got an idea. He would give nothing. So he would give Earl the gift of nothing. But in this world filled with so many somethings, where was he going to find nothing? Mooch often heard Frank say that there was nothing on TV. But as far as Mooch could tell, there was always something on TV. And Mooch often heard Doozy and her friends say, "There's nothing to do." But according to Mooch, everybody was always doing something. Millie came home one day and she said, There is nothing to buy at the stores. So Mooch decided to go shopping. Mooch went to the stores and walked up and down and looked in every aisle, and he found many, many, many somethings. The latest this and the newest that. But as far as he could tell, nothing was not for sale. So he went home, and he sat on his smooth pillow very silently, like cats often do. And not looking for it, he found nothing. So he went and he found a little box and filled it up with nothing. And he thought, oh, well, maybe my friend Earl deserves more than this. So he found a bigger box and filled it with nothing. Got it all ready. And he was ready to present it to Earl. He gave it to Earl, and Earl said, oh, Mooch, you shouldn't have gotten me anything. And Mooch thought, how did he know? Earl took off the box and looked at it and said, there's nothing in here. And Mooch said, yes, I know. Nothing but you and me. And so they sat quietly together, enjoying nothing and everything.
As we enter into a time of shared silence, I offer you these words by Elena Westbrook. In a world ravaged by violence, by hatred, by conflicts that seem eternal and unsolvable, sometimes the only thing we can do is be still for a moment to remind ourselves what is real. The sun that rose this morning, the dirt under our feet, the air whispering in and out of our lungs. This hour, try to be present in each moment as it unfolds. Your simple attention is what makes these moments holy. Would you please join me now in the spirit of prayer or meditation, as is your practice? 'Tis the season of advertisers run amok and ambitions amplified beyond belief. Of Martha Stewart moments mixed with desert island dreams. When even the most dedicated holiday hopper admits perfection isn't possible, and good enough is how the season ought to be. 'Tis the season of post-inebriated Santas blocking with consumer guilt the way to one too many holiday mad stores. When glad tidings of busyness keep from us the news that nostalgia ain't what it was. When we deal with the gap between what we could or should be doing and what is possible in the reality of today. The season when all the dreams you've ever dreamed of being, but aren't, return, reminding you of what you once could be. For all this and more, I say to you and to me, this is the season for generosity of spirit, for the giving of the heart without counting cost, for forgiving those who are not here, or not here as we would need, for gentleness with self and others, for hope that love in presence or in memory will pay a healing call, for conviction that the way you greet each day spring is what matters after all. Blessings, and may this holiday season bring for you and yours joy and peace. Amen. And blessed be.
Our reading this morning comes from Siri Leave Myram, who is a writer, editor, and storyteller based in Minneapolis, where she lives with her husband and daughters. I'll be reading it in her first person. My father is a Lutheran pastor, and to me, Christmas is chaos. The few days leading up to Christmas Eve were full of stress-packed activity, rehearsals, performances, multiple services, late nights. The list was long and time felt thin and brittle. We ran headlong into Christmas, like kids who get going downhill and don't know how to control their speed. On Christmas Eve, between 7 and 11 p.m. services, long after dark, we'd gather around our tree to open presents, yawning and trying not to fall asleep before driving back to church for the midnight mass. It was just what we did, but it rarely felt reverent and never felt restful. Christmas is the extrovert of the church calendar. It's social and busy. It's loud and flashy and well-fed and adorned. It's beautiful and charismatic and has the most wonderful story to tell. People often talk about wanting a more peaceful Christmas, but in the end, its call to come and join the party is a tough one to turn down. Christmas is the guest everyone is eagerly watching for. We're looking out the window, checking our watches, squealing with glee, and clamoring to the door as it finally pulls into the driveway. It's here, it's here. Maybe this is why I have always loved the shoulder seasons of the church, and Advent in particular. It's an introvert's season. Advent is expectant and full of hope. There's also a solemn quality to the waiting. Not dour or dreary, something grounded and okay with a close stillness, a quality that honors the waiting itself as sacred. It is a patient season. It asks us to be patient too. Advent asks us to make peace with the lingering and reminds us that we can. It gently shows us again that there can be deep joy in that in-between place, that one foot in front of the other pace. Certainly there is room for both the celebratory and the subdued. I just find that when Advent rolls around, my heart is deeply hungry for that deliberate quieting in the midst of the noise. The church in 21st century America does a lot of talking. Advent resets the church as a space for holy listening, something that it desperately needs more of. Advent calls us to reflect on the profound power of being, even, perhaps especially, when we don't have all the answers. How can I be a space, simple, open, warm, stilled, that is prepared to receive the smallest, humblest, most vulnerable version of divinity when it comes quietly knocking at my door? Can I welcome a God I don't recognize at first? A God who shows up in rags, comes from another country, and is dependent on my meager shelter? Am I brave enough for that? With two young girls, we're starting to forge our own Advent traditions. We light candles in the early dark, sing songs, talk about the holy mysteries of the season. We ask God for new eyes to see the miracle that intentionally makes its home in the midst of our daily mess. Last night, Stella, the youngest, loudest, and most kinetic person in our family, sat mesmerized by the candle flame. It lit a soft, warm circle around her face and hands. Slowly bowing back and forth, she stared in a rare moment of silence, then smiled. "Look," she said, wonder-drenched and wise, "it's reaching for me. The light is trying to reach me."
Today is officially the second Sunday of Advent in the Christian liturgical calendar. The word Advent is derived from the Latin word Adventus, meaning coming. Scholars believe that during the 4th and 5th century in Spain and Gaul, Advent was the season of preparation for the baptism of new Christians at the Feast of Epiphany on January 6th, the celebration of God's incarnation represented by the visit of the Magi to the baby Jesus. During this season of preparation, Christians would spend 40 days in penance and prayer and fasting to prepare for this holiday season. Originally, there was little connection between Advent and Christmas. By the 6th century, however, Roman Christians had tied Advent to the coming of Christ. But the coming they had in mind was not Christ's first coming in the manger in Bethlehem, but his second coming in the clouds as the judge of the world. It was not until the Middle Ages that Advent season was explicitly linked to Christ's first coming at Christmas. Today, Advent is a season of waiting and contemplation. Advent begins on the fourth Sunday before Christmas and ends on Christmas Eve. At that time, the new Christian year begins with the 12-day celebration of Christmastide, which lasts from Christmas Eve until Epiphany on January 6th. Modern Christian churches use the season of Advent as preparation for the rituals and celebrations of Christmas. Some denominations, like the United Methodist Church, even go so far as to urge their members to give extra donations of time and money to charitable organizations and to do the work of bringing peace and justice to the world. But what does Advent mean for us as Unitarian Universalists? We who may not be waiting for a coming Messiah, or we who may not even enjoy this particular holiday season. I believe, no matter our feelings about Christmas, that Advent presents us with a perfect opportunity to practice mindfulness and to remember to be present in our own lives. How many of you use an Advent calendar in your homes? Not many. More than first service, but not many. That's a tradition that I grew up with. I love Advent calendars. And now I have this very modern and battery-operated one that I use in my home. And my daughters do Advent calendars, and so my grandchildren also look forward to opening the little door. So each door opens up, and there's a little thing in there. And it lights up, which you really can't see much in here because it's so bright. But at night, it's really pretty. And it also plays this, which is annoying after about the 100th time that you hear it. So that part's usually broken. But this is the Advent calendar that we use. And the girls really, my granddaughters really enjoy opening the doors and counting the days until Christmas. If you want a more Unitarian Universalist Advent calendar, I found this amazing little Advent calendar online, published by a Unitarian Universalist minister, Ralph Yeager Roberts. And each day, you can flip it over, each day gives a different fact in Unitarian Universalist history as related to Christmas. So it really ties into our faith tradition. And the best thing about it is it's a free download. You can print it at home and make it yourself. So it's available to anybody with a printer. So I'll leave this up here for you to look at. I love Advent calendars, and I think it is a good way to start a mindfulness practice, but we'll get back to that in a bit. When I started researching mindfulness practices for this sermon, I was amazed at the volume of websites devoted to becoming more present in your life. There are so many articles that one could easily become overwhelmed by searching for information designed to make your life simple. And the advice can sometimes be more frustrating than helpful. Get more sleep. Smile more. Move your body. Shop slowly. Just relax. I know they mean well, but come on. Nobody in the history of the world has relaxed just because somebody said, just relax. It doesn't work that way. So if you're like me, someone who doesn't practice meditation or have a daily spiritual practice of mindfulness, you need a simple place to start. And of course, for me, the best place to start any practice is at the beginning with learning about what it is. So we're going to explore a little bit of what mindfulness is and what the benefits can be of being present in your life and to the people around you. No one can pinpoint exactly when mindfulness began as a practice, but we do know that it is an ancient exercise with its origin in the yoga practices of Hinduism and later Buddhism. In Hinduism, the priestly caste, the Brahmins, are required to memorize long tracts of holy scripture as part of their spiritual training and daily devotions. They discovered that meditation helped clear and focus their mind and improve their ability to memorize these long passages. Mindful meditation, therefore, became an important component of the mental, physical, and spiritual yoga practices. So let's fast forward thousands of years to the 1970s, when meditation practices became more widely known and practiced here in the West. In 1979, Jon Kabat-Zinn founded the Center for Mindfulness in Medicine, Healthcare, and Society at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. Kabat-Zinn, a molecular biologist, had spent many years studying yoga and meditation with Buddhist masters and realized that there were many health benefits to this practice. He studied meditation through a scientific lens and found that, indeed, there were consistent, reliable, and reproducible benefits and improvements to many mental and physical conditions, such as depression, anxiety, and chronic pain. The simple definition of mindfulness is the basic human ability to be fully present, aware of where we are and what we're doing, and not overly reactive or overwhelmed by what's going on around us. While mindfulness is something we all naturally possess, it's more readily available to us when we practice on a daily basis. Whenever you bring your awareness to what you're directly experiencing via your senses, or to your state of mind via your thoughts and emotions, you are being mindful. Some people are well suited to a seated meditation practice, but I am not one of those people. So instead, I'd like to offer some ways to be mindful when you are going about your daily life. Very generally speaking, our brain has two modes, doing mode and being mode. Most of the time, we are in doing mode. We want to get things done according to a particular goal that we have set in our mind. We have a vision of what that goal looks like, and we set about trying to accomplish it. Doing mode is important as it is the mode that moves our life forward and helps us achieve our goals. However, when life gets in the way of accomplishing our goals, that is where we run into trouble. When our mind is so focused on what our life should look like rather than what it actually is, we can lose sight of many of the good parts of our life. Being mode can help put things back into perspective. In being mode, we free ourselves of the judgments we make about our life and instead concentrate our attention on the experience of the moment. Being mode does not have any goal to achieve, so through it we are able to immerse ourselves fully in the present. We are, in general, busy people. But even in the midst of this busyness, we can find ways to incorporate mindfulness. The website mindful.org offers an easy way to begin a mindfulness practice called the Art of Being Present. And ART is an acronym that stands for Activities, Routines, and Triggers. These are things we all have in our lives, so these three areas are simple and easy ways to start our practice. The first, activities, can be anything that we love to do. Gardening, walking, sewing, cooking, really any activity that we enjoy and that we do on a regular basis. The next time you are engaged in one of your favorite activities, try to do it mindfully. Focus on your senses. Take note of what you see, hear, taste, smell, or feel. Do your activity without judgment of how it's progressing, without expectations of perfection. If you notice these thoughts creeping in, acknowledge them and let them go. Ours routines. We all have daily routines that we practice on from morning till night. We have daily routines. Choose one and bring mindfulness to it. Folding clothes, washing dishes, vacuuming, walking to work, eating lunch. Personally, I despise dusting, so this would probably be a good place for me to start. The next time I dust, instead of focusing my mind on how much I hate it, I can pay attention to each item I dust, noting its colors, its textures, its weight in my hands, its meaning to me, and why I have it in my home. Once we bring mindfulness to one task, we can add others and expand our practice to many of our daily routines. Triggers. This is the hard one. We all have things that set us off. right? You know what they are. Snarky emails, annoying colleagues, mindless drivers, you name it. Choose one and decide to replace your angry reaction with a flash of being present. Take a deep breath, or two, or three, and focus your mind on the task at hand. This exercise is difficult and takes a lot of practice. Finding the mental discipline to not be triggered by a particular thing that demands our attention is clearly not a one-and-done type thing. Failure is both inevitable and okay. Let it go. Try it again. These practices of mindfulness, activities, routines, and triggers offer a reminder that being present in our own life is not always passive. Much of the time, being present is an active process that involves the full attention of our mind and body. The Advent calendar that we talked about a minute ago can be a daily reminder of the practice of mindfulness. Each day, when you open a new door, turn a new page, you can remind yourself to be present in some small way during the course of the day. You can also light candles. This is another way to celebrate the holiday season, one candle for every day of the month. And as you light your candle, you can think about where you can be present. By choosing just one aspect of your life in which to be fully present, you may find unexpected and amazing results. By practicing mindfulness and being present, we can cancel out the noise and bustle and chaos of the Christmas season and instead focus on the joy of togetherness, the beauty of nature, and the peace to be found in the small moments of life. I have one final mindfulness practice to lift up to you today. I want to take a moment to recognize that the holidays are a particularly painful and difficult time for many people, for reasons too many to name. When I was going through a difficult time with a family member, Reverend Melissa taught me a loving kindness meditation that helped me a great deal. It is a simple yet powerful practice which uses the words of the hymn of affirmation along with a visualization technique that I would like to take you through right now. So if you would make yourselves comfortable in your seat, put your feet on the floor, your hands in your lap, close your eyes if you're comfortable, or soften your gaze. Now, in your mind, I would like you to picture yourself. Yourself as you are, not as who you want to be. Hold that image in your mind and repeat these words. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be whole. Now hold in your mind someone in your life who needs love and support, someone who is struggling, or someone you are struggling with. Hold the image of that person in your mind and say again these words. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be whole. And finally, think of all your loved ones, all those people who love and support you, the ones who hold you and care for you. Hold these loved ones in your mind and say, may we be filled with loving kindness. May we be well. May we be peaceful and at ease. May we be whole. Take a deep breath in. Slowly let it out and bring your attention back to this moment here. By practicing mindfulness and being present, may you find this holiday season moments of joy, of mystery, and of miracles. May it be so, and amen. Will the ushers please come forward? In gratitude for all the gifts of this wonderful and generous community, the offering will now be gratefully received. If you are a guest with us this morning, there is a gift for you in the basket. We are grateful that you are here. The blessing of truth be upon us. The power of love direct us and sustain us. And may the peace of this community preserve our going in and our coming out from this time forth until we meet again. Go in peace.